Welcome to the Break Your Bullshit Box podcast, where excuses aren't tolerated and results are earned through authenticity, vulnerability, and a commitment to excellence. My name is Amber Furman, success architect, attorney, and NLP trainer. If you're ready to bitch slap the bully in your brain, overcome the bullshit that holds you back, and design the life and success you've always wanted, then it's time for you to break your bullshit box and step into designing life and success on your terms. Welcome back to another episode of the Break Your Bullshit Box podcast. Today, we have an interview with Julian Hayes II. He is an author and founder of The Executive Health, a one-stop shop health, performance, and longevity for top performers who want to live longer and live better with precision. He's also the host of Executive Health and Life. And lastly, he's had 300-plus articles published in Inc. magazine, Entrepreneur, and Chief Executive, and many, many more. I'm really excited to dig into this episode with Julian. Before we do, I want to remind you that this episode is brought to you by Success Development Solutions and the Break Your Bullshit Box Academy. If you are somebody who's ready to take your life to the next level, if you're ready to understand the excuses that have held you back, we've created a free success blueprint guide for you to be able to start to design the life that you want to have. If that's something that interests you, head over to blueprint.successdevelopmentsolutions.com and pick a copy of that up today. Without further ado, let's jump into this interview with Julian. Julian, thank you so much for coming on the show with me today. I'm so happy to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to have this conversation. You know, I really enjoyed the talk we had even before we even started to hit record.
Yeah, me too. And I started recording those because my editor started yelling at me. He's like, that's where some of the yummy, juicy stuff is at. You got to record those. Mm-hmm. I am jealous. We were talking before about your Nashville connections. And man, I just love that city so much. What is it about that city that keeps you there?
Well, you know, first of all, I have to admit that the fact that you have publicly declared that you love Nashville, that is not something that I would hear too much growing up. Nashville was not exactly the it city in the South, definitely not when you think about the nation, right? So that's interesting to hear. But I think for me is, so I lived in New York, and I'm sure we'll get into that. And the thing I missed about New York was more of a city atmosphere, more of a business, a little more faster pace of life, right? And Nashville is starting to get that now. If you look at the downtown area, there's so many. The fact that we have a bunch of five-star hotels now is pretty big to me because it wasn't that much competition for hotels at one point. Now they're everywhere. You have the infrastructure that's improving. So I think it's being part of a city that is really stepping into its next phase. And to me, that's what I like, because to me, that's where I am professionally, personally as well. I'm very early stage. I say I'm an adolescent at business. I'm an adolescent in a lot of things. And I feel like I'm going with this swing with Nashville. There's a lot of undiscovered potential here. There's a lot of different industries that are not fully established here, or some that are not even here. So it's a great place to try to leave your mark and become a go-to in this whole area. And it's a great mix of, it's not too hectic like New York to where you can't turn it off. There's always something, but it's also not so sleepy anymore. And the people are really nice. No offense to people who are from the North listening to this right now, but we're much nicer down here. I don't think you're going to find nicer people anywhere in the U.S., but the people in the South. Maybe the Midwest a little bit, maybe. But so that's a few things about Nashville. We can get in. I wish like maybe somebody from the political team or something was listening, and maybe they give me a job in terms of being a spokesperson.
So I know, right?
Yeah.
It just needs to be a commercial.
Yeah, I mean, I can go into numbers, facts and figures with economies and stuff, because I look into that. It's a tax friendly state, so a lot of businesses are coming here. So I mean, there's a lot of reasons why. And so if you're into bachelorette parties, it's the number one destination for that, apparently. I didn't know that, but it helps the economy, right? So anything for that.
Yeah, my flights from Vegas to Nashville are always interesting, because normally when you fly into Vegas, you have one flight that's pretty calm and then one flight that's kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. Everybody's going to party when they're going to Vegas, and they're all exhausted when they're leaving Vegas.
But my flights to Nashville are weird because it's this weird mix of people that are leaving Vegas after partying and people that are going to Nashville to have a party. And then coming back, there's people that are leaving Nashville after having a party and coming to Vegas to have a party. And it's always this weird energy. So I think they're the two biggest places where people go to celebrate, which is incredible. I loved what you said about the city growing, because this is one of the things that attracts me to Vegas and also to Nashville, is the ability to disconnect, the ability to feel like you're in a city. And then, you know, you can be 20 minutes of driving and you can be so far into the country that if you tripped and fell, nobody would find you, right?
Yep.
I jokingly say if you got attacked by a goose, because they're assholes. And that, you know, that's been on my inside joke list for a while, because I was visiting Alcatraz and I was walking behind the back of Alcatraz Island and I was all by myself and there was this pair of geese. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how aggressive geese were. And all of a sudden, like, I know it sounds dramatic, but I just had this image that these geese were going to attack me and maim me. And I was going to get stranded on Alcatraz because nobody knew I was on the island. So geese are not my friend.
You know, you just brought up a point in my head that I think Nashville and Vegas are so similar again, because Nashville for the longest time was known for one thing. And Vegas for the longest time was known for one thing. And I think now people are just starting to see that it's having so much. There's so many more things about these cities. I know with Vegas, sports is a big thing that's finally coming there.
Yes.
And I mean, there's so many other things with Vegas other than just what you think of. And the same thing with Nashville. Country music, of course, is what you think of, but it's becoming so much more than that. So I do see why these cities are kind of brother and sister in that whole ordeal.
Yeah. And the reason I ask that question is because a lot of times there's so much similarities between what we like about our surroundings and what we're doing with our life and business. And as we talk about the identity transformation of these two cities that I would love to call home, I'd be happy in either one of them. Mm-hmm. It just reminds me so much of my journey, and I'm sure yours as well, of constantly redefining yourself. I mean, as business owners and entrepreneurs, if we get too stuck or busy in who we are and we forget about growing, we become outdated very quickly. And I think both of these cities are the same way. So I love that you made that connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the point that you made about redefining ourselves, reinventing ourselves, I think that, I mean, to me, not to get too philosophical, but I think that's part of just the whole purpose of life for me is growth and evolution. But, you know, from a practical standpoint in business, and even I think personally as well, is that we have to evolve because we're constantly learning things that we're encountering throughout our day-to-day lives. We're getting new information and we're learning things that were once important, maybe it's not important. We go through different seasons of life. And so I think to have that kind of stagnation probably brings a lot of frustration. And it's probably why I think a lot of people are frustrated as a whole now, is just because maybe they feel stuck and they just won't try anything or can't escape that for whatever reason. Maybe it's, you know, like some of their excuses, there's the stuff, the bullshit they're talking about in their head or something, who knows? But I think that's part of the general, if I look at the whole collective people, it's just that people that seem frustrated these days are ones who are just stuck and just can't escape that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mentioned in the intro that was recorded before you got here that you went to med school for just a short period of time, for about a year. And did you always know that you wanted to be good to go to med school? Or, and I was going to say, did you always know you wanted to be a doctor? But I guess it's presumptuous to think everybody that goes to med school wants to be a doctor. So.
Yeah. For me, in terms of being a physician, no, absolutely not. I come from a blue collar family, and in that blue collar family, I had, I was first generation going to college. I was also, wanted to be a marketing major originally. So my undergrad is in marketing, international business. I really wanted to just be an idea guy, maybe working for like GQ or some cool advertising firm that's just working on campaigns and you get to go to cool black tie parties. That's what I really thought. But then they told me in undergrad that no, most people start in account executive sales. And when they told me that you start in account executive sales, I was out the door. And I thought, well, I like to work out. I really got into working out then in health. The TV show was popular then. It's one of my favorite shows. And it just made sense. It's like, let's go be a doctor. It's a guaranteed salary of some good portion, right? It's prestigious. It's interesting to me. And it's take some tests. School was pretty easy to me. I was a slacker though, but school wasn't that difficult to me. You show up, you identify patterns, you take tests, and then rinse and repeat. But, you know, when I get to New York and you are around more people who are really about being a doctor and everything, me, not so much. Everything I was learning, I was thinking, how can I apply it to my life, my performance, my training, things like that. And I only really wanted to be two types of doctors. And I'm also meeting people when I'm going out, because my graduate school was my undergrad. I was still in that awkward, shy, quiet phase in undergrad. So I didn't do all the partying that most people do in college. So graduate school, I partied a little bit in New York. And so you meet people from all different walks of life. They want to build a startup. They want to win a Tony Award, Broadway. They want to be an actor, all these things. They had fulfillment. And that's something I was missing. I was just coasting, just doing exactly what I thought I was supposed to be doing. It felt good. I was getting that validation, because you're first generation. Everybody's like, congratulations. He's going to be a doctor. You're going to get the white coat. You're going to get the name on there. And life is set. But I just didn't have any. It was like a mild anesthetic. It was like, whatever. You can kind of gas yourself up and say, oh, this is great. But really, something was always missing. And I feel like you have this voice that you hear at different times. And it gets louder. The more you ignore it, the louder it gets. And it really got loud probably around the second semester. It got really loud. And I just had this feeling that something ain't right. And I did not want regret, because I think that's the worst poison that we can have. Out of all things, to be that person 40, 50 years from my age at that time, and they're saying, well, you know, I wish I did this, but I couldn't do that because I would have made so-and-so disappointed. So now you not only feel it with regret, but now you have resentment toward people who encouraged you. So now that relationship is ruined because you got this deep-seated regret. And I just didn't want that. If I said, if I'm going to sink and fail, I want it to be all on my own accord. So therefore, I have no one to blame. I have no resentment toward anyone. It's just that, hey, it just didn't work out. But my conscience was clean and all those things. So that was kind of the long answer of the whole ordeal. I got back after completing that first year back in Nashville, and I just had this moment of, I'm just not going back, and I'm just going to do something with health. And I always wanted to write as well. So I was all over the place, but kind of scared to, like I said, really come out of my shell and stand on my own two feet.
You said a couple of different things in your description of what caused you to decide to go to law school, and then also what caused you not to go to law school, med school. And the reason
that was the third choice.
That was the third choice. Yeah. What was the second?
The second was I wanted to be the cool advertising marketing guy.
Okay.
And then law school always appealed to me because I just wanted to debate.
Yeah.
And if I could debate's fun to me, but I think it would have to be certain types, because I would have a hard problem defending certain people. So I had to really decide, like, I don't know if I could be a defense attorney, because some of the cases I'm just like, oh man, I can't, my conscience can't do this. I don't know.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's interesting. As a defense attorney, we run into situations where we hit that wall of, I'm not taking this case. And I thought I wanted to be a public defender. And that was one of the things that I was like, you don't get to say no, you don't get to decide what your cases are. You mentioned something that really resonated with me, because I see so many parallels in our story. And it was that first generation. And so everybody's giving you these kudos, and you are in this successful element. And then you start to hear that thing, that voice in your head, or feel that thing that says that it's just not right. And that looks different for every single person. And you said it gets louder and louder and louder until you listen. And I'm curious what that looked like for you, because I know that looks different for every person.
Yeah, for me, I think I just started encountering other alternatives. It's just to almost show me, hey, you know that gut feeling you have? you can do it. Somebody's doing this, right? I saw different fitness magazines and business publications, and I looked in there, and I thought it, you had to be like a multinational CEO or something to get in there, and it was just journalists or just regular people writing. So I saw those things, and then I saw bitter people that were older, and I was just like, man, that sucks. It's just like, man, that sucks. And I just didn't want to be like that. And I also thought about, I had things on the plus and minus, writing down the pluses, writing down the minuses. And I always thought, you can always go back to school. The government will love nothing more than give me loans to further put me in debt. So that's the benefit. But this moment now, I will never have as good of an opportunity. Energy levels, everything. Responsibilities, expectations to do it. And I figured that it's better to choose myself and my own emotions and everything over those of others. Because if that's the case, then I'm going to realize that people are just going to live through me the whole time. And I'm not even living my own life. And I've seen how kids turn out like that, where they're just fulfilling their parents and everything. And really, at the end of the day, I also realized that a lot of times when people are telling us, hey, don't do this, or you should just stay there, they value safety and security.
Mm-hmm.
And they also, in a way, call themselves looking out for you. Because mm-hmm. if you tell them, hey, I want to go start a business, hey, I want to go do this, one, they don't even know what that means. Entrepreneurship, starting your own business, seems like a fairy tale that you see on TV. It's nothing that nobody in the family did. So you start to see their lens, and it's like, oh, okay, there's a lot of fear here. There's a lot of uncertainty here. And most people are not comfortable with uncertainty, with like, hey, if I put this effort in for 8 hours every day, will I get the result I want down the line? In our world, it's like, I don't know. Well, for them, it's like, okay, I know if I go do this work today at the job, then I'm going to get this result in my paycheck every Friday. So you just have to start to see those things. And so I became a lot more empathetic and compassionate, because at first I was mad. I had no lie to tell you. I was mad at everyone. I had plans that when I hit certain milestones, I'm going to let it be known, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I was just like, I let that go.
Yeah. You know, that idea that when people doubt us, that they're mm-hmm. trying to protect us, that was a huge realization for me. And it was something that really impacted my relationships with the people around me, because mm-hmm. I am much more adventurous than the majority of the people in my family. And for a long time, I struggled with why they didn't support my choices. And when I realized that it was a protection thing, it just changed the game, right? So I think that it's really cool that you put that together. You have this really interesting mix of this logical thought pattern mixed with this sensory, feeling, psychological, philosophical mind and world. Have you always been like that? Or did that come from your education?
I think I've always been like that, and I just didn't have the awareness. And I think when I finally started being comfortable with allowing myself to be who I was, I think all these things fully came out. And I joke with my friends. I said, my 30s are much better, have been much better than my 20s, just because I'm so much sure of myself. And so I'm sure the energy I give off in everything is so much better. And I think it's been just, of course, I think maybe the logical stuff is reading,
mm-hmm.
maybe a little bit of education and stuff. But I think the other thing is just an intuition that I'm finally learning to listen to. And like I said, I had different phases. So I might seem very extroverted now, but I was kind of a mute for a lot of my life, a little socially awkward. And so I actively worked on those things to kind of mix with everything else now. And so I think it's been a combination of just a lot of self-development, and then just a lot of work by myself, just really mm-hmm. going inside, reading, thinking, and so many other things, and studying.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much good stuff here, because I can't tell you how many times I hear, and I'm sure that you do as well, that, you know, I'm just not good at networking. I can't own a business because I'm not an extrovert. I'm an introvert. And mm-hmm. people think that business owners and speakers and people who podcast and they're on stage or run this business, that they're just born with those skills. Mm-hmm. And it takes so much work and so much effort to become the person that they are. And so it's just this commitment to continual growth that's so important.
It is. I think probably the only thing naturally that came to me probably was maybe a little bit with school, but even then I still had to study a little. I still had to study more than some of my friends. The only thing I could probably say, oh, this is just a gift, maybe athletics. That's about it. Everything else, I didn't party a lot because I had my nose in a book trying to play catch up with everyone else and all those things. So I think a lot of times the world we live in, naturally, we see a lot of things in the light. We see the end result. We see the speaker on stage with their hands up waving. You know, we see her smiling on stage. We do not see the preparation work behind the scenes. A lot of people go to therapy. A lot of entrepreneurs end up in therapy for at least a stint or two. It helped me. We don't see them working through that. We don't see them working through, who am I to do this? I feel like an imposter. I just came from so-and-so. You know, you see all these things, right? I don't have a formal degree in this. Or this business, I'm on like my 10th iteration of this business and it hasn't worked so far. Everybody's questioning me. What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing? And you're like, no. It's in my head. It's coming in my head. Right. So we don't get to see those things. All we get to see is like me and you laughing on here talking and everything, but we do so much stuff behind the scenes that nobody ever sees.
Yeah.
And so I think that's one thing that, that causes maybe that little thing, that shift because, and a lot of times some of the big people that I'm sure people look up to, you're not going to ever hear them really give a dissection of, hey, at this stage of the things, I was doing this, or I had to struggle with this. It's just like, no, life is good. Business is good. Everything's great. And we know that's not true, but unless you're in the mix yourself, you wouldn't know. So like for me, one of the hardest things was actually falling short repeatedly. It's not something I'm used to. No, I'm used to, I study, I get result, I do good, I get validation for it. I go bounce a ball, I shoot, it goes in the hoop, good. I miss, bad, right?
It's so simple.
So black and white, right? It's not like, hey, I'm gonna do some business development, but I'm gonna end the day and I don't really see anything different in my world.
Yeah,
I'm going to keep doing this for a while. I'm going to keep outreaching and pitching, but nobody's responding. I guess this is working, right? So there's a lot more gray when you start getting out in this world. One of my friends calls it the jungle, right? And so it's those little things, right? And so I remember I went to a dinner one time and they asked, have you had, which iteration of your business are you on? I'm like, man, I've been struggling. I'm like on my fifth or sixth iteration of the idea. And they're like, good. You know, it's almost like it's a rite of passage.
Yeah.
No one gets there the first time, just unscathed. Everyone has to make some type of pivot, whether it's with a personal life plan or whether it's with your professional plan. It's very, very, very rarely a linear path.
Oh yeah, very rarely. And you know what you're talking about reminds me so much of a TED Talk that I heard. Are you familiar with Brené Brown?
I am. I have read a couple of her books.
Okay, yeah, she's fantastic. And when I was first starting to figure out this life stuff, I was, as the audience knows, suffering from panic attacks and anxiety attacks. And I ended up in therapy. And one of the first things that my therapist gave me was her TED Talk to listen to. And it became a staple in calming myself down and growth. And she talks about obviously the arena and being willing to step in and get your ass kicked. And she talks about this interaction with somebody who came to one of her presentations. And he says, I heard you and I'm prepared for the possibility that I might get my ass kicked. And she says, then you didn't hear me because it's not a possibility. You will.
Oh yeah.
Get your ass kicked. It is not a question of if, it's a question of when. If you're out there pushing yourself, if you're playing full out, you're going to get your ass kicked. There's no question about it. It's about who's around you and what happens when you pick yourself up.
Absolutely. And it sounds not kind of psychopathic, but it's kind of like, so I've gotten really into distance running as well. And the pain is almost kind of something you look forward to because, you know, if I can somehow endure this and push through and persevere on whatever this is, it feels really good. There's nothing better and more soothing to my self-esteem than to really stick with something that I absolutely hate and that is just arduous. But you get so much self-esteem and self-worth with yourself, no matter the end result or not. It's like, hey, I stuck through this. And, you know, speaking on this whole thing, one of the big things is I had to shift from becoming results oriented to being process oriented.
Yeah.
So putting my, you can say self-worth, putting my self-esteem, confidence in, did you do the process? Are you doing the process day in and day out? Because that's all you can ultimately control and not the end result. And I had to really learn that because, you know, the same thing coming through academia, going to school, it's all result oriented. Nobody tells you, good job. You've been really studying hard. They don't care about that. They care about.
They don't care about the grade. It doesn't matter. You've worked hard.
Yeah. What does your score say? What does your exam say? That's what we care. They don't care about the process. And I think that's from childhood as well.
100%.
Yeah. So I think that's probably one of my, if I had a message for the people, for like the world, I would say, please start training people to be process oriented more so than result oriented.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is really the basis of the idea of fall in love with the process, right? Mm-hmm. Is fall in love with the work, fall in love with following through without seeing the immediate results. And especially now, you know, we live in a society where instant gratification is there in a way that has never been before. Attention spans are lower. You can order food and have it delivered in 20 minutes. Amazon, I mean, hell, I got to the point now where I'm irritated when I have to wait till the next day for my package. I'll like turn on the filter of things that will be delivered same day. Wow. Like your instant gratification is just insane in how it is available. And so then we build our business and we're like, wait a minute, what do you mean that traction comes after, like podcasting, for example? My podcast has been going since 2019. And there are a lot of podcasts that never make it past their first 40 episodes mm-hmm. because they want that instant gratification. And the research has shown that it takes up to 3 years to really start to get to a point where you can monetize your podcast, right?
And consistent 3 years.
Right.
I've been off and on for a few years. So it's consistent, right? And that, I mean, that's a true thing, right? The instant gratification thing, because you see this now with the online world, and the online business world's different than like the brick and mortar business world. And it was really good for me to actually meet more brick and mortar business owners and people that didn't think about business from just internet messages, but they just had a hunch to do a business, because it really helps solidify expectations.
Yeah.
Because I thought, I was like, man, I'm not a multimillionaire, and I've been running this business for four months.
4 days.
And, yeah. And I'm not doing Joe Rogan numbers. I must be doing something wrong. I need to go look for a hack or something. Right. And I think that was one of the biggest stress reliefs for me. And one of the stress inducing things for me was just this pressure, because when you probably a lot of people, you know, especially coming from our backgrounds, where you leave something like that, that's already pressure, because you probably have this in it thing that like, I want to prove a point. I want to really prove that, hey, this is the right decision and no one's going to question me. So you have that already. And so then when you're in that kind of state, it's like you're trying to bake a cake, and the cake is your business. And you got this recipe. It says 350 for like, I don't know, 2 hours. I'm not really a baker. But you're like, no, I want it quicker. So instead of 350, I'm going to do 415 for maybe an hour. And probably the bakers out there know that that's not how it works. You're going to ruin the cake, because there's a recipe there for a specific reason.
And right.
That thing takes time to build up. And so I think when I think about that, is a lot of my biggest mistakes was because I was trying to turn my cake up well over 400, because I thought I could take a shortcut and skip steps in the recipe.
Yeah. And it's interesting to me that even though you decided that med school wasn't for you, mm-hmm. what you have created in, sorry, my dog has decided she wants to be a part of this podcast. So I don't know if you can hear her whining. What's interesting to me is that even though you decided med school wasn't for you, you have ended up in the health space in a way that actually supports people. Mm-hmm. And I mean zero disrespect to doctors when I say this statement. Oftentimes, we need that coaching that goes in conjunction mm-hmm. with the doctor aspect. Doctors are great at diagnosing. They're great at creating solutions. They're not always great at prevention mm-hmm. because we don't get in to see them fast enough, right? And so you're in this world now where you get to talk to people about their health and how they get to create that. And all of these things that we've been talking about related to your career and your what you're going to do with your life, that leads to your stress levels, which is so incredibly important when you're talking mm-hmm. about health. So talk to me a little bit about where you've kind of found your niche in this health world and how that satisfies what you were hoping to be able to create when you went to med school.
Yeah. So I ophthalmology was probably my top thing I wanted to do, but then I also thought it was cool. I saw people that are like concierge doctors and I was like, mm-hmm. that's pretty cool. And I didn't instantly think about this. This is probably, I guess it'll probably be a better picture of, so my whole thing is about being curiosity. That's like my mm-hmm. thing. I got a plaque. That's what I got in basketball, curiosity and vision. Oh, it's a nice dog.
I know, right? Jesus, Jasmine, I let you stay. Go away.
And so I initially started off just with like fitness and personal training and stuff. And through some clients, even at the gym, the transformations wasn't really what I thought it was going to be. It wasn't so much about physical. It was more of like one girl ended up leaving her nice big four accounting firm and followed her dream of public speaking and helping at-risk youth. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. She's got confidence. I didn't put two and two together. Another woman, another guy, and they mentioned stuff about confidence and really stepping into a different area of life. I was like, oh, I get it. You know, so fitness is like, it's like a gateway drug to really stepping into your, I guess, the person who you really want to be or the person who you're afraid to become. And yeah. I think, and that probably happened because of myself. When I first started working on everything, it became you thought you were doing it for the physical stature and all of that. But what it really became was it gave you a sense of confidence. And that confidence can come from a bunch of different things. It can come from, hey, I kept my word every day. I went to the gym X amount of times a week. I did my walks. I did my nutrition, et cetera, et cetera. So that started to make sense. So that's one of the clues right there is that like, okay. Then they said, hey, I think you're really good at this aspect. It had nothing to do with like exercise program. I was like, okay, a little hurt to the ego, but this other thing, okay. And then I get curious myself on, I'm like, after you pass like 25, 26, 27, you start to think, maybe it's at least for us guys, it's not so much about the physical then, especially because when you hit that goal, fitness becomes even more of a comprehensive, holistic picture for you. You start thinking about the legacy aspect, the longevity aspect. Mm-hmm. And so I get deep into this. I reach out to different doctors to learn about different things. And then this whole thing all comes together when I go to a dinner, a mastermind dinner, and we're just talking about what you do. And he's like, why don't you just call it executive health? Mm. I was like, oh, it makes sense. And because my name originally, it sounded nice. I really liked it. But you had it. It was just, oh, it sounds nice. But what does that mean?
What does it mean? Yeah.
Yeah. So now this name has the double meaning that I always wanted, right? So of course there's a corporate meaning to it. That's probably what you see surface level, but deep in even in that, it's more about taking full sovereignty over your health, being the CEO of your health and life. So I have both of those now. And as far as including the medical aspect, I always had a dream in my head. I didn't know how it was going to be executed of including medical stuff because medicine has benefits. The reason why a lot of times people are frustrated with it is not even because of the doctors. It's the infrastructure and the system itself. Insurance and so many other people, they're seeing 50, 40, 30 people a day, only for 15 minutes at a time. There's a lot of frustration there. But there's a lot of doctors who are cash-based. So I thought, how could I build like a comprehensive wellness consultancy that took influences from like the hotel industry and other French brands? That's a whole other side story. And health stuff. I wanted to really create something unique. And it's still a work in progress because it's always constantly evolving. And that's what I wanted to do. And that's where I came up with this whole thing. And so now it's something that can be done virtually. There's a partnership with a physician that they can go to for in-person testing that's coordinated. But it's really, everyone's literally a blank canvas. And so so people say, what's the formula? I don't know the formula. It's what are you coming with? And generally, I mean, generally there's some things that we're always going to do with everyone, but I wanted it to be a really handcrafted, like somebody's going to design a very nice handbag and it's handcrafted. I wanted people to think about this from a health context. And that's what I just wanted to build. I didn't know how I was going to build it. You're just making things up. You're just making things up at that point.
But as much as this is going to sound counterintuitive to people who are listening to this podcast, the how is the least important part of building a business, right? Like there's a million different ways to do the how. Mm-hmm. But we get so caught up on what's the right way. And, you know, hearing you say that I don't know what the formula is so empowering, because especially in the world of online entrepreneurs, going back to that instant gratification that we were talking about before, I get so frustrated when I see people talk about do these actions and you'll lose 40 pounds in 20 days, right? Mm-hmm. And because it's not feasible. And people are looking for a quick fix. They're looking for the instant gratification. Individuals sell into that instant gratification. And then the person that's looking for it gets disappointed when they don't get it. And then it just sets them back up for failure. So the idea that everybody is their own little puzzle piece that we get to put together, and what you bring to the table matters in figuring out how we're going to put that puzzle together, is so important for people to understand.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, I don't know, I think it's funny. Some people might not think it's funny, is that a lot of times when we want these quick, fast results, like somebody asked me, they're like, Julian, if you had all the clientele initially, all the infrastructure, the team and everything, could you even handle it? And I was like, no, I couldn't handle it. Mm-hmm. Like back operational wise, no. And as a leader and stepping into actual CEO role, no way. I'm still learning how to lead myself. So you really got to ask yourself at times, am I actually ready mm-hmm. for what I'm asking for? Am I actually taking steps every day to put myself in the best position of becoming that person? Someone would say, hey, I want to lose this amount. I mean, yeah, there's different tools we can use now with health to really have a radical weight loss. But more importantly, with the same context in business, do you have the mindset?
Right.
The mentality to even handle that, because sure, you can lose that and get some assistance. But what about when that cycle's done? Are you going to revert back to old behaviors? Because we've seen a lot of times where people have maybe had a good season or two, a good quarter or two, but the identity did not change with those quarters. So therefore they went back to the default of what they were initially. So that's the thing you also have to keep in mind as well.
Yeah. So if somebody's looking at this and saying, well, how do I know where I get to start? Can you talk about your executive coach worksheet that you've created that individuals can start to figure that out?
Yeah. Yeah. So I shared about 17, I believe, just tips and actions that you can take just to start creating a more healthier overall lifestyle. And it's created that way because different people are going to be at different levels. And some people are going to the gym already. Some people maybe need a few more mindset things. And so there's a combination of different pillars of health on there. But it's a pretty good thing to start with. And I would not try to do all 17 at once. I mean, you can if you're just absolutely a person like that. But I would really pick out what really stands out to you. Maybe pick a couple and really get those going. And I'll give you the example. So for me, good exercise drives good nutrition. Mm-hmm. So I noticed that the more I'm dialed in with my exercise routine, the better food choices I'm going to make. Whereas mm-hmm. you don't hear that with a lot of times. A lot of people say you can't out-exercise a poor diet. And there's truth with that. But you also have to think about everything else that's connected with it.
Yeah, there definitely is truth to that. And also, For me, when I'm exercising, I want to eat healthier. And so while you can't exercise, out-exercise a bad diet, exercising allows you to want to eat better so that that's not a problem, right?
Yeah.
So if somebody's listening to this and they want more information about that, where can they find that free download?
Yeah, you can just go to executivehealth.io and you'll see a tab there for free report. And you'll see also different tabs for a lot of other different information as well.
I love the correlations between our stories. I love the correlations between our cities. I love the awareness that you have about what it is that you are getting to create and the impact that you get to make in the world. If people are listening to this and they want to continue this conversation with you, what's the best way for them to reach out to you?
Yeah, it's the same thing. You can go to executivehealth.io. Just go to the contact page and just fill out the little form there. And then we'll do a complimentary meeting and just really discuss it. It's like a pseudo coaching session. And so you'll get something out of it.
I love it. Julian, thank you so much for coming on the show with me. I really appreciate it. It's been a great time getting to know you. And I'm looking forward to some coffee in Nashville next time I'm there.
Absolutely. I cannot wait to meet in person. And thank you so much for having me.